IPR's Iowa Art Showcase returns today to learn more about one of Iowa's best-kept secrets, St. Luke's United Methodist Church in Dubuque. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom for the Iowa Art Showcase, and on our last visit to St. Luke's, we focused on the amazing Tiffany Church windows. This time, we're going to hear more about their amazing collections and their upcoming Aldersgate Day Heritage Service, which is going to be held on Sunday, May 26th. We are fortunate to have joining us today at St. Luke's their tour guide coordinator and one of St. Luke's church historians, R.R.S. Stewart. And thanks so much for joining us today, R.R.S.
Thanks for having me, Jacqueline.
Before we get into talking about some of these other treasures that you have here at St. Luke's, tell us a little bit more about Aldersgate Day and how this is interpreted by the United Methodist Church and Heritage Sunday.
The Methodist Church was founded by the Wesley brothers, and that was in the early 1700s. So they actually founded Methodism in 1739. But before that, slightly earlier in the 1730s, one of the brothers had a revelation. So he went to a meeting on Aldersgate Street in London. And at that meeting, he felt like God had spoken to him, and he felt compelled to start a new movement within the Church of England, or the Episcopal Church. So originally, it was the Methodist Episcopal Church, because they were trying to add more of a method or a regimen to the Episcopal Church. And then after having this revelation, the Wesley brothers continued in their studies, and then eventually in 1739 founded the Methodist Church. And so Aldersgate Day is May 24th. So that's supposed to be the day that the Wesley brother went to the meeting and then experienced this revelation at the meeting. So the Methodist Church encourages all their member churches on the Sunday closest to May 24th to do a service focusing on their heritage.
So give us a brief overview of the heritage of this church. It's been here for a long time and had some wonderful forefathers and foremothers who had the foresight to make it really an incredible building and the art in it.
St. Luke's United Methodist Church claims to be the oldest congregation in Iowa. The building we're in now is actually the fourth building of the church. The first services actually happened when Reverend Barton crossed the river and was held at a tavern. That was the only place available, which is kind of ironic when you realize the Methodists were temperate. But I guess the taverns just were the meeting place for the town. And then eventually they had a custom-built log cabin in Washington Park, which is by where the post office is in Dubuque. And a replica of that cabin is actually on the fairgrounds in Des Moines. So if you go to the state fair, you can go there and see it. And they do kind of a hymn thing there on Sundays during the fair. So that cabin was the first church building. It also served as the first school and the first city hall. And then the first custom-built church building opened in 1839, and it was called the Centenary Church because it was 100 years since the founding of the Methodist Church. So that Aldersgate story has a little bit of a personal meaning because our first official building beyond the log cabin was named the Centenary Church. Then in the 1850s, they opened the Main Street Church, which was here on Main Street, a little bit beside us, where the parsonage now stands, is more where that church was. And then in 1895, they decided to expand and build the current church that we're in. So they ended up with a whole half of a block. So if you look at this building from above, it's basically a square because it's an entire half block. So it went from the middle of the block where the previous church building is all the way up to the edges. So this building started the planning in 1895. It's called St. Luke's Methodist Church because St. Luke's is the patron of physicians, and Dr. George Staples was the head of the Building and Grounds Committee at the time that they were planning that church. And then the construction and refurbishment was from 1895 to 1897. They actually started holding services in 1896, but didn't do the formal dedication to 1897.
So last year on St. Alder's Day, Sunday, you talked about all the Tiffany windows And this Aldersgate Sunday, you plan to talk about some of the other treasures that you have housed in this church that are part of this church's history. And one thing that really caught my eye was the organ that they purchased right around the same time that they built this building right here.
So the maker of the organ actually displayed at the 1892 Columbia Exposition in Chicago, so named because it celebrated the anniversary of Columbus, quote unquote, discovering the New World. So the organ maker, they're from Detroit. It was named Farron Vody, and they had a display there. And some members of the congregation, because Dubuque's about 180 miles from Chicago, went to the World's Fair. That's where they saw the Tiffany windows, but that's where they also saw the display by the Vody Company. And since they were in the process of starting to raise funds for a new church, they decided that's where they would get their organ from. So when the building was being constructed from 1895 to 1896, the organ was brought here on two train cars from Detroit. And they had an organist at the time. St. Luke's has had a long history of music. How involved the organist was in the decision of which organ to buy, I don't know. But I think they thought that this particular organ was kind of the top of the line because this company was displayed at the World's Fair. The organ itself has always been an electric model. So when this building opened, it already had electricity in it, and the organ was installed, so it's electricity that supplies the pumps. Right now, the organ is off, but if I would turn it on, you'd start to hear this humming, which is the bellows kind of filling with air. And the organ has actually been cleaned and refurbished twice. The first was in 1949, kind of about 50 years, they decided it was time to give it a thorough kind of work over. And then again, when we underwent the sanctuary restoration, which started in the 90s and is actually still continuing, that was the second time that they did some work in the organ. Now, prior to that, the organ console actually used to be up in the choir. So it was against the back wall in the choir. And when they did the latest refurbishment of the organ, they moved it down to where it is now, a little closer to the congregation and a bit at the angle, so the organist isn't totally with their back to the congregation.
Also, one thing that's very unusual in this church is that you have this frieze.
The frieze is actually modeled on one in Italy. So the original frieze is from the 1490s and is made of marble. Ours is plaster with marble dust mixed in it, so it's not solid marble, but it's a replica, which is the Singing Children, and it's a series of children making music. And it's up front, kind of surrounding where the choir loft is and the organ is. So you see children holding scrolls or with music or other instruments. And the frieze is a replica of the one in the Cathedral of Florence, which was made by Luca della Robbia. And it's actually in the Duomo Museum in Florence now, if you want to see the original frieze. And I don't know exactly why they chose the frieze, other than that Dubuque, a lot of the population is Catholic. And so our theory among the historians is that there is a little bit of the keeping up with the Joneses effect. So you've got the cathedral here, which is this grand Catholic building. And so the Methodists felt like they needed a building, you know, that was just as grand. And so they decided to install a frieze here.
Now, also included in this church, you have an unusual baptismal font.
So this is carved of marble, and it was installed in 1913. So when we talk about the phases of this particular building, it opened in 1897, and that's when five of the large picture windows were here. We now have over 100 Tiffany windows, and most of those were actually installed in the time period from 1913 to 1915. So we've got these large sliding glass doors. That's when those were put in. And when we talk about our Tiffany window collection, we don't just mean the large Tiffany windows. We actually mean every classroom window, every bathroom window, all of those as well. And most of those were installed between 1913 and 1915. At that time is when they also put in this baptismal font. So again, it was kind of a major refurbishment of the church about, you know, 20 years since it had just opened. So the white marble is supposed to symbolize the purity and innocence of the children. And another symbol of purity is these lily carvings that are just around below the actual bowl of the baptismal font. And that's near the front, and it's kind of in front of the angel among the lilies, which is another symbol of purity. So the motif of the lilies on the baptismal font ties in with that angel among the lilies window that it's in front of.
And also then you mentioned these sliding doors, which are gigantic.
Sometimes when people come to visit the sanctuary, I'll open the doors and you kind of get these oohs and ahs because people don't actually realize they're giant sliding doors. And of course, they're on tracks and they're balanced. So they're a little heavy to get started. But once you get them moving, they roll quite well. And the reason for them is because when this church originally opened, it had two balconies. So there's a balcony directly above where we're sitting. And there was another balcony over by the south hallway. And then behind that balcony are classrooms. So the classrooms are still there, but that second balcony has been taken out and is now just a wider hallway space. And that provided yet more seating for the church. So when you needed to, you could slide open those glass doors and you could use that second balcony and you could get close to 1,000 people in the church between the main level and the upper level and then that second balcony area. Now, as our needs have changed, we decided it was more important to have larger Sunday school rooms than to have that second balcony space. We do still open the doors, though. So at the end of the service, the custodian comes and opens the door and people go into the south hallway for coffee or tea or congregation. Or when we have our handbell choir performing, the doors will be open because they'll set up the tables for the handbells in that south hallway area.
Speaking of bells, tell us about the bells. That was on your list of treasures.
So in addition to being one of the historians here, I'm also one of the four tower bell chimers. So the whole instrument is called the tower chime, and it's made up of 11 bells. And sometimes people will call it a carillon, but it actually doesn't have enough bells to be a carillon, so it's just a tower chime. So the bells were also installed during that 1913 to 1915 time, and they were cast by the McShane Bell Foundry Company of Baltimore, Maryland. So they were dedicated on September 21st, 1913, to a woman named Elizabeth Jane Amy by her husband and daughter. And each of the bells has an inscription on it, which is from the Te Deum, which was an old Latin chant in the Catholic Church, but also in the Episcopal Church. We have it in English, not Latin, but a little bit of kind of the Methodist history coming through with the inscription on the bells. And the bells themselves are up in the bell tower. So it's a few stories up. So one story up from us is the balcony. And from the balcony, there is a staircase that goes up another story to where the console is. And so the console is almost like a giant keyboard. It has a little bit over an octave. So from middle D up to the D just above it. And we don't have a regular F, we only have an F sharp, but we have both a C and a C sharp and a G and a G sharp. So you can play any key that has at least an F sharp, but it could also have a C sharp or a G sharp in it. So the console, it's these giant wooden levers. And when you push down on the lever, there's a steel cable that goes up yet another story into the bell tower where all the bells are located. And that steel cable is attached to the clapper. So the bells themselves don't move, but when you pull on that steel cable, it causes the clapper to swing and strike the inside of the bell. This is another treasure that was relatively recently refurbished in 2013, is when the steel cables were installed. Before that, it was actually leather cables. And as you know, leather gets stretched out over time, so it doesn't hold the tension as well. So after roughly 90 years, we decided the leather had gotten so stretched out that they had to be replaced with steel. And then, of course, the steel doesn't need to be tightened as often because it holds the tension a lot better than leather does. And there's only one chimer playing at a time. So there's four of us. So each one of us roughly does one Sunday service. And then we kind of rotate through. So some of us might end up doing it twice a month. Or if we have a special service, we have someone chime in addition to on Sunday. So you just open up music. And what I do is the church secretary emails the bulletin on Friday. So when the bulletin comes out, I'll go up there and I'll look at the music in the hymnal and see if it's in a key that I can play on the bells. And if it is, I usually practice about three songs because at the end of the 8:30 service, we just play one song after the postlude. But we then play for about 10 to 12 minutes from 10:30 to 10:40, 10:42, before the second service starts at 10:45. And then we play again at the end of the second service. So I like to play a song at the end of the services that they've sung during the service, again, as long as it's in a key that can be played on the bells. And then what I play during that kind of 15 minutes in between services is just whatever I want. And we have a binder that goes throughout the year, so we'll have Christmas songs. We also have some patriotic songs. So we have America the Beautiful. If you want to play a patriotic song, we can. So it just kind of takes us through the whole year.
Well, tell us, too, about your Tiffany lamps.
We have four, and most people, if they don't know about Tiffany windows, they will know about the lamps, because a lot of Victorian homes did have Tiffany lamps in them. And when you go to museums, the lamp is the most common artifact you'll see from the Tiffany company. So they're most well known for their windows and lamps, but they actually did a whole series of interior decorating. They're a complete firm. So we have four. So we have one in the choir loft. We have two that are hanging up above us in the balcony. And the fourth one is actually in the staircase on the way up to the bell tower. And it could almost be called a chandelier, but it doesn't have the different levels that a chandelier does. These are large hanging suspended lamps. And it's the same type of glass that Tiffany used in his windows. So he called his glass process Favreel glass. And he worked with a man named John Nash, who helped him come up with the process for how they got the color into the glass. So the same process of putting together a Tiffany window goes into making a Tiffany lamp. So they lay out a pattern. There were women who worked in the Tiffany studios called pickers, and their job was literally to go through all the tubs of glass and pick out the little pieces that would go in. And then solderers would come along, and they'd use lead or solder to join the different pieces of the glass together. And then at the end of the process, you could end up with a window or a lamp. And I think when the congregation ordered the windows, because they knew that Tiffany Company made other furnishings as well, they decided to get the lamps. So they do add a little bit of individual character to the church, because it's not your typical chandelier. It's actually a stained glass lamp. And I will mention just a few of our other treasures. So at the front, we have the pulpit, which was made of oak, brass, and Siena Italian marble. It also used to have a medallion on it that was made by the Tiffany Company. So it looks almost like a ship's wheel, but again, that's stained glass medallion that the Tiffany Company made. And then our brass altar rail is copied after the cathedral in Ravenna, Italy. So we've got the frieze up there copied on the Cathedral of Florence, and then the brass altar rail copied off the cathedral in Ravenna.
So what time will the service be, RRS, on May 26th for this Aldersgate Day Heritage?
We, over the summers, go to one service. So May 26th, because that's the Sunday of Memorial Day. From Memorial Day to Labor Day, we have one service. This summer, we're going to be doing the service at 10 a.m. And right about that same time of Memorial Day to Labor Day. We have a tour guide stationed here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Now, the church building itself is open every day from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And we do have a recording, about 12 minutes, that can be played. So if you show up at a time when a tour guide is here, there'll be a person to give you a tour. But even if you come at a time when there's not a tour guide, the church secretary can play the video for you. And so you can still get a little bit of this history that I've been talking about. We also do tours by request. So if you have a group of at least 8 people, you can contact your church office and we will schedule a tour, which can be at any time. Sometimes people come in the evenings. Sometimes people want to come on a Saturday. We're not always open on a Saturday, but if we are doing some sorts of special Saturday events, we will also do Saturday tours.
How can folks get more information, like if they want to investigate a little bit on their own?
You can go to our website, which is St. Luke UMC, or if you just do a Google search for St. Luke's UMC Dubuque, it will bring up the website. And that has our contact information, so both the phone number you can call for the church and the email you can send an email to if you want to schedule a tour that way. We do also have sites dedicated to our windows. And when you go to that, there's a picture of each window, a little bit of the story of each window, and there's also a sound file. So if you hit the play symbol, you'll actually be able to listen to parts of our heritage service from last year, which was all about the windows. So if you actually want to listen to someone talking about it rather than just reading it, you can listen to those clips on the website.
Thanks for today's Iowa Art Showcase conversation goes to IPR's Chris Fenton and Alexis Hahn, and a wonderful thank you to our very knowledgeable tour guide and St. Luke's Church historian and State Historical Society of Iowa technical advisor and Loras College faculty member, R.R.S. Stewart. And thank you so much for sharing with us today. It's been great.
Yeah, thank you for coming back. I'm glad you were able to learn about some more of our treasures.